Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Life and tune.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers and the positive change, Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for our African-American-owned solar design, installation, workforce development, EV, EV charge, and other African-American solar-owned renewable companies to address the high effects of energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the under and underemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you also know if you join us on a regular basis that this show is brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. And you're listening to that initiative over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are also streaming via Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. You also know this show is brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, which you can get more information on that organization by logging on to blacksinsolar.org. Ladies and gentlemen, we are very, very pleased and excited to have a guest for our listening audience today. The young lady is Donna Clara Reardon. She's the founder and CEO of Solar Stewards. And I'm going to sort of, I have her on the airways, but I want to sort of talk about the importance of the few important and the importance of our African-American owned installation design workforce development companies in this arena. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a new paradigm shift because of climate change. We're talking about things that affect us every day in our everyday lives, and all you have to do is watch and view the Weather Channel. This is real. The Biden administration has made commitments through the Justice 40 initiative and other initiatives that are pouring out of the Department of Energy, EPA, and all six of our federal agencies. But yet, when we look at the solar industry, out of over 9,000 firms doing business in the U.S., We have less than 35 African-American owned firms I've been able to identify and bring to this platform. And on that note, it gives me great pleasure to welcome the founder and CEO of Solar Stewarts, Mrs. Dana Clara Reardon. And the question is, what are social renewable credits? And with that being said, welcome, Dana, to our platform.
Hi, Ronald. Thank you so much for having me. I love your program. The focus is so critical and needed, not only to our community, but the entire country and world. So thank you so much for allowing me some time on your platform today.
Well, I'm very pleased that you took time for your very, very busy schedule, young lady, because I asked this question to all of our company owners in this arena. When do you sleep? I'm looking at congratulations, chosen in the 40 semifinalists in the competition American Made Solar Prize, and this was back on December the 7th. This was released by the Office Department of Energy, and your company was a winner in that competition. You also come up with something that is unique to the industry. Social RECs connected corporate renewable energy procurement with historically excluded communities. Could you go in a little more detail and what you come up with?
Yes, it would be my pleasure. And the new and exciting news is we're now finalists in that same Department of Energy, National Renewable Energy Lab contest. That also has a separate category for solutions, software solutions that address, diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice. So we won both categories. We're now finalists, and we're in the home stretch. It's certainly a somewhat daunting task to not only meet the aggressive timelines of the contest, but also to do so and bear the burdens of systemic oppression and discrimination out here. If you thought it was bad in energy, try software development. So that being said, when do I sleep? I'll get back to you on that. I certainly have my coffee's ready for this opportunity to share more about Solar Stewarts today. And I'd be happy to get into social RECs or social renewable energy credits. What I saw in being a developer and consultant in the renewable space over the past decade plus is, limitations on policy, particularly when it comes to supporting distributed generation or rooftop solar. Even in regions and states that have done very well in their utility scale development or the large scale that you see in let's say a rural field somewhere, the opportunities for historically excluded communities to realize those solar assets on site, as in on their roofs, owned by them and controlled by them, was really still lacking. At the same time, we saw the corporates really move ahead with their sustainable and renewable energy goals, buying, billions of dollars on a global scale of this renewable energy. With the policy limitations, maybe not, well, let's be frank, in this administration, in addition to the last one, we're still struggling with getting, realistic and not even going to call it progressive because it's, this is pretty basic at this point and affects everybody's life across the globe. Climate policy passed in Congress. It just became apparent that, we needed the private sector involvement in some of these equitable initiatives to deploy renewable energy. So that's where social renewable energy credits come from. There's a thing, called a renewable energy credit. I certainly didn't, invent this. It's been around since the 90s. And that just goes to show that every megawatt hour of renewable energy counts as a renewable energy credit. And that is one of the ways that corporates buy their renewable energy, particularly when they can't do, you know, other opportunities like virtual power purchase agreements and power purchase agreements or PPAs. So before I, you know, overwhelm anyone with any acronyms, these renewable energy credits have just been just a game changer for certain segments of the market. Again, mostly that utility scale that's built in, and mostly in states that have a renewable portfolio standard or RPS.
Legislation.
Let me
preference and make it plain for my listening audience. Here in the DMV market area, because I'm based here in Tacoma Park, Maryland, right outside of the district, and I've been involved in numerous meetings prior to renewable portfolio standard legislation being passed in Maryland and the District of Columbia. I've been an avid steward at attending these meetings, and that is where we in the African American community, we don't fall short. What happens is most of our people who are sitting in these rooms, they're working for these utility companies. And we have to understand one thing. Everything that we see, touch, and smell is based on public policy. Public policy turns into legislation. Legislation drives dollars. Now, this country is divided on many accords. But one of the things that you address very, very elegantly, Dana, when you start talking about corporate interests versus the public interest, and that cuts across all race, color, creed, and everything else. And what we have is we have regulated and deregulated markets. And to make it plain for our listening audience, that means that the utility companies control the price of energy, the transfer energy, and who can buy and sell. And if you happen to be a person who has land and you want to call in a private developer to develop a solar or wind farm, well, you can't even can do that unless you can identify first who's going to buy the energy, and secondly, how are you going to connect the energy? Because there are limits through the public policy that the utility controls that determines how much megawatts or gigawatts and whether you're going to have net metering. And believe me, they have something called lobbyists. They are the hired gunslingers on Capitol Hill, and they have billions of dollars to look after the interest of the GOP, gas, oil, and petroleum industry. What happened in the District of Columbia was when the law was passed, it's called the Renewable Portfolio Standard legislation of 2016, Mayor Bowser signed that into law. It had a 50% renewable portfolio standard timeline by year 2030 that 50% of energy being used inside of our nation's capital must come from renewable sources. But they allow PEPCO, which is a subsidiary of one of our larger nuclear conglomerates in the energy field, basically said, okay, for wind, hydrogenetics, everything else you can buy from energy generators outside of the District of Columbia. For solar, it has to come from the physical landmass in the District of Columbia. Well, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know the density and population and land problems you got in the district. You're definitely not going to build a 1,000 or 2,000 acre megawatt farm. You just don't have the space for that. So what ends up happening, it became a shortfall in the District of Columbia because PEPCO in the legislation made sure, okay, if we'll pay for the shortfall, it was a $15 million shortfall in 2017 after legislation was signed in 2016. In 2018, that shortfall jumped from $15 million to $26.1 million. Now, that is when I had Mrs. Betty Ann Kane at that time. She was head of the Public Service Commission. She came on these airways with the founder of an organization called Neighborhoods United, Mrs. Anna Schulman, and they went off over the fact that the legislation, Dana, had actually started being formulated in 2014. So D.C. residents were already paying these fees on their utilities for this renewable portfolio standard legislation. But because PEPCO didn't have enough, with 375,000 customers, didn't have enough residents, commercial or residential or public or private sector clients that they could buy these energy credits from, it created the highest RECs values in the world in terms of renewable energy credits. And then the proliferation of Lottie Dottie and everybody who was in the solar game pounced into the District of Columbia with, and it was on and popping, if I'll say it like that.
That's right.
This is what actually happened in the district. But fortunately, we had African Americans at the helm who really care about the people. And I've got to give Mrs. Donna Cooper, who's a very dynamic sister who heads PEPCO, was leading the charge on the inside, being very cooperative with the Public Service Commission here, and they came up with the Solar for All program, which is the most unique program in the country, where if you meet the area median income, and they use the federal AMI, not the like the state to qualify DC residents, which qualified almost 99.9% of African Americans in the District of Columbia for this program. Well, of course, there wasn't that type of money being put into the execution of this program. So that program got launched after Betty Ann Kane and Ms. Anna Schulman came on this platform and other talk show formats, literally raising hell about the fact that based on the law, that the renewable portfolio standard legislation by year 2032, that legislation was supposed to have 50% of 100,000 low and moderate income residents in the District of Columbia reduce their energy costs by 50% by year 2032. So they had to get money out the door. And that's what launched this program where their people have been able, I know they've done about maybe 400 rooftops in the district with no out-of-pocket expense to those residents because of this Solar for All program. Is very unique, and it was started by African Americans. Mr. Mark Davis at WDC Solar and Mr. Ted Tarbu over at WDC SEU, they created this program, and it's an excellent program, and we beat the drum so hard that we bust the drum cover numerous times around talking about the uniqueness of this program and why it should be replicated across the country, because it's coming out of the nation's capital. I'm sorry I got on my soapbox, but you sort of opened up the door for that story, and I needed to tell our listening audience that we're paying for this whether we got PV systems on our rooftops or not. Go right ahead, Dana.
Well, I appreciate that background, and that's exactly right. You know, D.C., doing solar here in the southeast Atlanta, where we're based, and looking at, you know, a lot of this market in the south, you know.
It's regulated.
It's Southern Company, you know, territory. So yes, it's an IOU or investor-owned utility for most of the southeast, but there are pockets of electric and municipal co-ops. But all that to say, you know, it was just inspiring to see D.C. and the Renewable Portfolio Standard really incentivize that market participation. And, you know, I think there's been a lot said and seen with state governments in the southeast primarily. And, you know, it was just the writing was on the wall, waiting around for a renewable portfolio standard in Georgia just wasn't a viable solution, begging the Public Service Commission to please, please, please give us a couple million dollars for a net metering program. You know, it works until the money runs out, and then you got to go back and beg again every 3 years. It just wasn't a viable solution where we sat for the communities that we served, meaning historically excluded communities, you know, the affordable housing opportunities, the community and rec centers, the senior centers and schools that could use, that need that extra revenue for a project that a rec would deliver. But, you know, you talk about a renewable portfolio standard and the example that sets, you know, at the same time we have voluntary markets, which are what they exactly sound like. It's voluntary. It's not a portfolio standard per se. But entities, corporates still purchase renewable energy with renewable energy credits in these markets. And so we sought to utilize that voluntary market approach and then connect the value of that deliberate and specific partnership with a historically excluded community and solar site within that community and make sure to tell the story and ascribe that value. And so that's what social renewable energy credits are. They're renewable energy credits generated and serving historically excluded communities, with the proceeds and the revenue of those social RECs passing directly to historically excluded communities. It was just the time for our communities to realize the incredible investment in renewable energy that is happening and to be included. And so that's what social RECs are. They're an opportunity for, you know, again, I use the term historically excluded because it really does, you know, put the onus on the excluders. Let's say we're not disadvantaged communities. We've got a lot of advantages. You know, we've got amazing talents, ingenuity, and innovation. So, you know, we choose our words very wisely. But we will not be excluded anymore, particularly from market mechanisms that allow us to not only catch up to the opportunities that we were excluded from and not afforded, but, you know, surpass and leapfrog. And when I say leapfrog, you know, I'm talking about distributed energy resources and the upcoming opportunities for that smart grid that allow for the participation of distributed energy resources, or DERs. And that's why our program really does focus on those rooftop opportunities, aggregating them, and finding that corporate partner who wants to recognize the value of the equity inherent in these assets and portfolios.
Well, Dana, I know a business associate of yours, Mr. Gilbert Campbell of Bode Energy. He's based here in Washington, D.C. Now, I've worked closely over the years and watched Gilbert's career emerge, and there's a group here called Solo Systems, which was headed by a gentleman, Mr. George Ashton, and I know that Gilbert and Mr. Ashton goes back and they have a history. Now, I recently attempted to get Gilbert on a Zoom call to talk to all of our African-American solar installation and design firms to sort of talk about the deal I was glad to see happen with Microsoft. I think it was 250 megawatts, and that was supposed to sort of be targeted to the same disadvantaged underserved communities. I also look at the fact that Duke Energy has put together in South Carolina a program where they are allowing a certain amount of megawatts to be developed for private land developers, military installations, and colleges and universities. But when you look at the amount of on that cap that's there for the state of South Carolina was really nothing. It was like, to me, it was like 35 megawatts, and that's not a whole heck of a lot. When we begin to look at the way that the industry is being controlled and to look at the fact that solar, wind, I think solar is around 3% market penetration in the U.S. The fact that we haven't even scratched the surface, but the fact of the matter is our developers and our solar installation companies, whether they be large or small, face the same issues if they are not a part of the corporate move on renewable. See, it's not that they don't want to move to renewable energy. It's that they don't want our smaller developers and our companies to be smaller companies, whether it be African American, Hispanic, to play a role in this game. And I say that, and I don't charge that that attempt, even though I know that there's a lot of lip service paid around these issues, because as you've indicated, Dana, that when you are applying for these grants, you're competing for these grants. And it opens the door for another story, but I've got to sort of share with you. Back in January of this year, we started back in around November, but we pulled together a team through, but I also serve as president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar. And we were able to get Talladega College in Tougaloo College in, not Talladega, but Tougaloo in Jackson, Mississippi, where we applied for a $19 million grant. There's an organization out of based in your neck of the woods in Atlanta called Global Apprenticeships, or young African-American brothers doing some very important things in workforce development. So we tied them in with Power 52 out of Baltimore, Maryland, Mr. Mark Davis with WDC Solar, and Mrs. Chanel Manafort, and with Mr. Will Shirley of Jackson, Mississippi, our vice president. And we successfully applied for a $19 million grant through the Good Jobs Challenge to train 750 young people to become PV installers and energy artists and electricians for this new green EV charge infrastructure industry. We need to get our young people trained, and we need right now for this grant to be awarded to Tougaloo College. But there was $3 billion in this Good Jobs Challenge, Dana. They got a request for $15.8 billion through Commerce through this Good Jobs Challenge. So I want our listening audience to sort of understand the competition and the need in this area when they're telling people, well, you can't lobby, but you can advocate. So what we do, we advocate on this show, Dana, because to me, our companies and our institutions are at a disadvantage when you begin to look at these RFPs and see the short turnaround time and everything that a small company's got to put together to try to get one of these proposals out the door. That is why I wanted to have you on and let I raise you up because of the outstanding work that you're doing at Solar Stewards. I want you to come on back in on that note.
Well, I appreciate that, and you're right. You know, we're really talking about systemic barriers. You know, that's why Solar Stewards, we focus on distributed energy resources, because when it's behind the meter, it may, as in, you know, where it connects to the grid, anything that's, you know, on your property, it's a lot harder for an external entity to control. You know, and so that ownership is very important. And, you know, an extension of ownership, you know, having that entrepreneurial mindset where, you know, we're out here as Black-owned businesses, hiring, you know, a diverse workforce, training, as you mentioned, that diverse workforce. That's the only way we're really going to have systemic change. It's really great to have a livable wage and a job that you can advance in, you know. That's certainly a good fit for some families, and entrepreneurship certainly isn't for everybody. But that being said, we really have a once in a lifetime or even generational opportunity to really manifest our enterprises and build wealth in our communities through ownership, whether that be ownership of businesses, ownership of intellectual property, ownership of physical solar assets. I think ownership is really the key, and we've got to fight for those opportunities. Just as you said, they really don't come easy, but certainly the more of us out here, you know, to expand that pie and to stand up to some of the, you know, discrimination is, you know, there's power in numbers there.
Well, that's the slogan for our show. If there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. Now, I can't let you go, Dana. I know I asked you for 30 minutes, and we've already done that, but I want you to take a little time to sort of talk about your role with Black Owners of Solar Services, BOSS. And y'all started this group, African-American professionals working in the solar PV space. And it was very interesting because I reached out and I couldn't reach him, but I'm going to play a segment on Mr. Walter McLeod after you leave the airways, and he is also a member of BOSS. So I want you to sort of talk about your role with BOSS and what y'all are doing there and why y'all felt the need to form that, because We're fighting on the same same issues over here at NABS and trying to make sure we can build coalition so we can get some of these things done, because it's just the few of us out here in this arena as it relates to our companies, and they're on the forefront, and I must say that they are doing outstanding. We're talking about ordinary people doing extraordinary things. So with that being said, Dana, could you share a little bit about BOSS and your role as a member of the board there?
Sure. You know, we remember that racial reckoning, which was, you know, 2 years and some odd days ago. And, you know, I just want to recognize, you know, say their names, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor. I mean, you know, so many, those people that gave their lives for, you know, well, not willingly, they were murdered, but you know, to just making sure to make sure that they didn't die in vain. We saw a lot of, particularly corporates, you know, post the Black Square, post the pledge, a lot of, you know, maybe some of them were well-intentioned, some of them maybe, you know, just saw an opportunity, you know, for PR, perhaps.
It's called being on the right side of history. They wanted that image to be known.
Holding them accountable to that was really what BOSS is about. No one can, you know, do anything for our communities better than we can. And, you know, there's a lot of paternalism saviorism sometimes involved in some of these, again, sometimes they're well-meaning initiatives. So, you know, Bob came, you know, just with that very clearly in mind that if indeed folks want to step up and improve their own entities, you know, whether that be their own, you know, perception or their businesses, then they need to follow our lead. And we've been providing that as a collective of Black business owners in the space. And I'll say, you know, there certainly needs to be more of us, but there's not just one or two. So that's one thing that Boss, you know, pushes against is, you know, we're in every corner of this country, if not world. And so, you know, we just need that opportunity to, you know, participate. And, you know, a lot of initiatives take the form of, let's say, mentorship, or which, of course, is valuable for any entrepreneur, whatever stage you are at in the journey. But, you know, let's face it, some of the names you mentioned, you know, and yourself, we've been out here doing this work for decades, just maybe not, you know, recognized. So, you know, I don't know if training, you know, any type of equity always needs to take the form of training. We certainly know it needs to be access to capital. We certainly know it needs to be access to opportunities. So, you know, we just really wanted to make sure that we weren't involved in another okey-doke or, you know, whitewashing, well-intentioned, you know, false equity program. And so, you know, together we can really guide some of these initiatives to be actionable and impactful.
Well, I understand as we say, the game. When I first started going to meetings about 8 years ago, when I sort of changed and came into this renewable energy sector, you know, I would always hear people in the industry using terminology such as PPAs, MOUs, a lot of things I was familiar with because I've been in the business and marketing area. I did my due diligence, and we built the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, and we put together the most extensive database to sort of bring this information to the African-American community, because it's information, as Mrs. Kathy Hughes has made it very, very, very nationally known, is power. But if you don't do anything with that information, and if you don't have a plan, so that's one of the reasons why I became involved with the NABs and have been working with these companies. So what I'm going to do, Dana, I've already taken you past the time I asked you for, but is there anything you, because I know how busy your schedule is on a daily basis, but is there any thing you would like to say in closing to our community about what they should be looking for and what they need to do to be diligent about participating in these local meetings at the public service commissions? Because all politics is local. And unless our people begin to really understand that and make sure that they have people who are serving on these public service commissions, not just there looking out for their interests rather than the community's interests, then we're going to continue to have these issues. I mean, there's no way around it. I used to be sitting in so many meetings, I used to start feeling like a token because I was the only one in the room that looked like me and
right.
You, Dana. I mean,
yeah.
And this is right here in the nation's capital. I mean, that's what's so disturbing about. You know,
right.
I mean, it's right here, and we got Lottie Dottie, we got Black professionals here that can get it done. But what's been a challenging source for me is working with our HBCUs. So what I'm trying to do right now, Dr. Lillian Abrams, she is one of our founding members. Her firm is called Peer Consultant. She has the leading African-American-owned environmental engineering firm in the world. She started here in Washington in 1978 with three employees. She now, post-plandemic, she had five offices and two offices internationally, where she's hired about 200 of our engineers working on various projects around the country. So what we've been trying to do is work with, we put together a 5-year HBCU sustainability plan, which I'll get to you, and maybe we can work together with some of our HBCUs and our churches, because they have the land. If we can get our HBCUs and our churches to make commitments with our African-American solar installation design firms with the land, we have access to plenty of financing out here. And I've got access to companies like the PG3 Group, Mr. D. Brown, the largest African-American developers in the world. They have over $3 billion in capital assets. Mr. Eric Henderson, XG International, I also have access to him, and I have access to other financing sources. So money is not so much the issue. The issue is our communities being aware that of what we bring to the table, because our people pay gas, water, and electric bills every day too. So
That's not
begging for people to give us anything. We are paying for this. All we are demanding is that our young, at 70 years old, I lost count on if they got something past the Gen X's, because I've got a 8-year-old
son. Yeah, it's Generation Z, Gen Z.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's
thank,
people call
thank
us right now, or undergrad.
Yeah, yeah, thank you for helping me out on that, because I got a generation.
I love Gen Z. I always pick up for Gen Z, and you're so right.
Yeah,
it's their turn.
And our young people are brilliant. Our young minds are brilliant. So we've got to make sure these STEM opportunities and these various programs and these funding sources reach down to our companies and to our institutions, and these collaborations must be made, because you can't do this. Nobody can do this by themselves.
That's true.
Do this work by yourself, and
that's
just real.
And it's got to be multi-generational, just as you're saying. And so, you know, that's exactly a great setup for, you know, my thoughts that you asked of me, you know, what to leave with the audience today. You know, it is a collaborative effort, and it really does start with the youth. We, Solar Stewards, has had an internship program, and I'll tell you what, you know, sometimes you think of internship, you know, they're there to learn from you, but it was certainly an exchange both ways, particularly that beautiful energy, you know, not just that hopeful energy, but just that ambition and vision. And, you know, you contrast that with folks that, you know, have been in the industry, and you know, I get it. We take a beating out here. When I first got into solar, some of, you know, the toughest people to interact with were folks that had a solar career, you know, in Carter's day. And, you know, we know history, they had to take a back seat with the Reagan administration, taking the panels off the White House and kind of rolling back the clock on that. So, you know, I get it. You can get pretty jaded out here, but, you know, when you can tap into that fresh energy of an innovation of some of our Gen Z and even younger generations. I mean, it's their planet. They're going to inherit this, you know, dumpster fire of a climate mess. So we've got to elevate their opportunity to participate in the solutions and respect, you know, where they're coming from. Just, I mean, we need new solutions. So why not have those fresh eyes? And I would encourage any young person or any person just new to the field to get involved. Like you said, that local level is so important. Please, you know, participate in your public service commission. Make sure you vote down the ballot for, you know, folks that have something, you know, to do with clean energy, renewable energy, and be open-minded. I hear you. I've had conversations where we had all of the money lined up, and, you know, it just didn't get over the line. And that's tragic, particularly when you're talking about a black church or a historically you know, historical black college, you know, to have all everything lined up and the decision not being made is, it can be a major setback. So be ready to embrace some innovation.
That is a reality. People said, what's the name of the game? I said, it's called politics and public policy. It controls everything. It's like likes and dislikes. And why don't you like an individual? Well, someone told me something about that individual. I said, well, did you talk to the person? You know,
yeah.
And that's sort of where I am with life, because I've seen that based on where we are as Africans in living in America, and as African Americans, we must have permanent interest. People say, what do you mean? I said, if one is not going to deliver for you, the other has to, if you got only got two horses in the race. But we got to figure out how to hold these people accountable, because they're taking our dollars. They're taking dollars every day, and we are paying for our own demise, if I can borrow from one of my favorite pastors and being a member of the National Action Network, Reverend Sharpton. He's saying, you know, we can't be that stupid. So with that being said, I want to thank you, Dana Reardon, for being a guest on this platform, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You will definitely not be a stranger to this platform. And once again, thank you for taking time for your very busy schedule to join us here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Thank you, Ronald. Amazing platform. Continue to do this amazing work. I appreciate it.
All right. And you have a blessed day.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, you were listening to Mrs. Dana Clarendon Reardon, founder and CEO of Solar Stewards. Now, we are going to take a slight pause for the calls, and we're going to come right back, and we're going to listen to a video that was basically done several months back, and that particular video that was done was on Mr. Walter McLeod, and it was called Celebrating Black Voices in the Solar Industry. Mr. Walter of Echo Capital Solar, and this gentleman has done some very, very interesting things, and we want to get right back to that after we take a slight pause for the calls here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic.
Someone singing, I got you. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Now, right before we took that break, I was basically talking about a gentleman, Mr. Walter McLeod, who is the CEO of Echo Capital Solar. And this was a piece that was put out during, I think, February, celebrating Black voices in the solar industry. It was put out by the Solar Industry Trade Association. So without further ado, you're going to be listening to the voice of Mr. Walter McLeod, who's also a member of the board of directors for the Black Owner Solar Services organization.
My name is Walter McLeod, and I'm the managing director and founder of Eco Capital Companies. As you know, the solar business is a tough business, and it requires a really strong network of peers and professionals and good mentors. And I have, back in the mid to late 2000s, the American Association of Black Men Energy was just a real lifesaver for me, because there were so many African-American professionals, primarily in the utility space. They really opened doors and encouraged me to really focus on growing my business and that I could be successful. And that gave me a leg up. One of the other areas that I think I would focus a lot more on today versus when I started this business over 10 years ago is commercial and industrial space. What you're seeing is a lot more serious emphasis being placed on ESG. And companies, corporations, large and small, are embracing the ESG principle. So we bring more than just a practitioner who can accomplish the job in an excellent way. We bring commitment to opening marketplaces to different types of companies and diverse and new players. And it shows a commitment to those ESG principles, not just in writing, but in action. Yeah, you lead by example. And I also see the opportunity to create new leadership models and new examples for younger generations to look up to. So as we embark on this transformation of our economy, hopefully there will be leaders that emerge that look like me and other folks who are committed to deploying clean energy and looking at clean technology solutions, whether it's renewable energy and solar and storage or electric vehicles that are powered by solar and storage. These are the people that hopefully will change, you know, our lives for the better for decades to come.
Yes, 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 ladies and gentlemen, you were just listening to the voice of Mr. Walter McLeod, and his organization has done some very, very outstanding things. Walter McLeod has over 25 years of executive experience in the business development area, strategy and government relations in the energy and mobile sectors. He has been actively engaged in clean technology deployment finance for over a decade. Mr. McLeod is the founder and managing director of Echo Capital Companies, where he has served as a senior advisor to energy companies, startups, investors, trade associations, and think tanks. He has a junior partner candidate with Kleiner, Perkins, Clearfield, and Byers, KPCB Green Technology Partners Investment Team. Walter has been an active thought leader in shaping clean energy and mobility policy in the United States for many years. He was appointed to serve on the original Utility 2.0 Project Steering Committee commissioned by the United Nations Foundation. Walter was also appointed to Value of Solar Stakeholders Committee commissioned by the Virginia General Assembly. He has successfully developed or permitted a portfolio of utility-scale solar projects with a capacity exceeding 500 megawatts and valued at over $750 million. Mr. McLeod is also the founder of Global Energy and Innovation Institute, where he created the Electric Vehicle Roundtable Consortium, produced the 2017 landmark document, guiding principles for electrifying mobility industry. Participants include Xcel Energy, Dominion Energy, Despic Bank, Daimler, Tesla, Volkswagen, EVGO, ChargePoint, Lyft, Uber, representing a collective of market caps excelling $344 billion. Walter was also appointed to the Virginia Automated 20XX Strategic Plan Autonomous Mobility Committee by the Virginia Department of Transportation, the VODT. Walter has served on several boards and advisors committees, including George Mason University Alumni Association, the American Council of Renewable Energy, Chemical Angels Network, MIT Energy Prize, and Surge Ventures Accelerator, to name a few. Mr. McLeod has earned an MS in chemistry from the College of Sciences at George Mason University, a Bachelor's of Arts in Chemistry from Virginia Polytech Institute and the State University, completed an executive education program at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. So this sort of lets you know this brother is sharp, real sharp as a razor. So he knows what he's doing and what he's talking about, and it was my pleasure being able to bring you his thoughts on another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Now, you know, ladies and gentlemen, as we have a few more minutes before we'll be closing our show, you know that this show is done, is brought to you every week by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which serves as an economic blueprint for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small. And what do we say about the slogan for this show? If there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. Now, Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, as I indicated, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation, design, EV charge, EV manufacturing, workforce development and design companies, and other African-American-owned renewable energy companies in the finance area. To do what? To address the cost of higher energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses, to do what? Develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally. Also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know that the show is brought to you by the BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. You can get more information on that initiative by logging on to positivechangepc.com. Go stroll over to our GoFundMe link and you'll be able to see that information. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we don't want you to meet us here next week. We want you to beat us back here on this platform. And we have a very exciting guest for you next week. So please join us on for another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. As we close out, we just say to everybody every week, please go in peace.
Someone singing, I can just sing it. Life is a song worth singing, why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.